I can't tell you how many times I was really like, man, I get this. I really want to be clean. You know, I got it. I'm telling, hey. And I walk literally, I'm feet away from the jail that I'm, that our prison that I've spent time in. And I go straight, like my ride's coming with the shit. Mm. And I go straight to using it, man.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show.
Oh.
Made by and for people in recovery.
That's
show
us.
About recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Yeah, that was your first time hearing that one.
That was nice. I like that. I liked it.
All right. Today, we're talking with David Cleope.
Hello.
Counselor, recovery advocate and mental health director at Most High Media.
Jeez, all those titles.
David brings a unique perspective as someone who's been on both sides of the bars.
Oh.
Formerly.
What kind of bars? What? A lot of different bars.
Yeah. All of the bars. Except for the lawyer kind.
Chocolate bars. Alcohol bars. Xanax bars. Xanax bars.
Oh, man.
Chocolate bars.
What are you talking about, man?
All the bars.
Holy smokes.
Formerly incarcerated, now providing mental health support to those still inside. Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thank
to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here, you guys. You guys look great.
Thank you.
Love you, dudes.
I'm a dude.
Dudettes and dudes.
Damn it. I'm so excited. I guess our theme for the night really is, what does it take to create a space for healing in one of the most chaotic environments imaginable, jail? Mm. How do you reach people navigating violence, addiction, and survival mode every day?
Mm. That's a great question. The truth is I'm very fortunate. It's weird to say I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of experience in those places, right? So it's not something that makes me feel uncomfortable. It's really a place that I'm very used to, and I actually am very comfortable going into that place. So that for me, that works, you know, being adjusted already to the place, to jail. I think that it's important to like automatically give like a level of like, let them know that I understand. Like, let them know that that's what I use for me in everything. My relatability to people's situations is like a big advantage that I have naturally. And it just so happens that being in institutions is my thing, man. And it's always been a passion of mine to go in there and be a part of that.
How do you let them know? You come in and like check them up or what? You're like... You're like, yo, what's up, fool?
Well, you know, it's kind of like that. It's like at the introduction, we talk where it's known that I'm not coming in there just as a clinician.
Yeah,
it's like I'm coming in to be helpful because I was there.
Yeah,
you know, and I have a lot of experience in that. You know,
so along the lines of your experience,
yes,
what was your first experience receiving or witnessing mental health support while you were incarcerated?
Well, what's really funny about that, I love that question too, because for me, it was like where I'm at right now, where I'm counseling right now, is a lot like the first place I've ever been incarcerated. Mm. It's the same setup, right? And the first time I ever had counseling ever in my life was in jail. You know what I mean? So I think I could say his name was Arnie Lesher. He was a great guy, but you could see like the cocaine in him from a mile away. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You could tell he's been through it. And okay. that was what really attracted me to him because back then you didn't really, like, this is like early 90s. So it wasn't like he would come out and say that. Like, he didn't try to relate to me in that way.
He wasn't coming in on cocaine.
No. He was in recovery.
He was in recovery. from.
Yes, from.
Okay. Yeah, but you know, cocaine. When you meet somebody, you're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you were.
He didn't
okay.
still, like, have powder on his upper lip, yeah, like, right. No. Needle hanging out his arm. No, okay, no. Okay.
Nothing like what do you think about clean. That? What do you think about that?
He was clean, but he was clean, but he had all the ticks.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? In fact, like, guys would be like, I think he was, you think Arnie was high whenever? Last session, I was like, no, I think he was straight. So he related to me on a level, and I can't remember too much of, like, how it helped me, like, therapeutically, but it was really cool to sit down with him and just know that he was kind of familiar with me and the things that I was going through. He related to me really well, and it meant a lot to me at the time. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things that my relationship with him is something I think about when I go in there with the guys. You know what I mean? And sit down. So it did mean something to me. You know.
Was there anything other than just the way that he made you feel? Understood.
I don't think so at that time. Not at that time, because I wasn't really listening to anything. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like I was really trying to get clean or anything like that. It was just I went in there on a drug charge, and you know, even counseling in those places it wasn't set up like today. You know, you just went to go see this guy because they knew I was a drug addict. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like I was really trying to listen and trying to get something out of it that was going to change my life. We were just chopping it up. But I still appreciated it.
So it planted a seed.
It did. Yeah, exactly. It did plant a seed.
So something
because I'm using it now. I mean, it's something that I think about often, you know, when I'm in that situation.
Because in the moment, you weren't thinking, you were like, well, just get through this. Like, yeah.
I enjoyed going there, but I just wasn't listening to anything that he was saying that would give me, like, the opportunity to get sober. That wasn't a part of my agenda at that time. That was later. And that was, you know... I went to a years after that. The next time I really went to a long-term facility was in prison, and we went to I did a year-long program and what they call TC. It was a therapeutic community. That's in Pennsylvania. I think down here in Georgia it means something different. Yeah, it wasn't RSAT though. It was set up more like an MRT situation, and it was a year-long. And I listened and I really got a lot out of it. But I remember going through that whole process at that time. And I was like, man, you know, it was ran by inmates. So the staff was all inmates that were like already finished the program. Right. And that was cool. But the facilitators weren't doing anything. Like, you never saw them. They had their own offices. They rarely interacted. They would like come out almost routinely for an hour at this time, not doing much, and then go back for the rest of their day. And then for the rest of the day while we're programming, it's all us doing it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, that was cool, but I felt like, man, why don't these dudes come out of here and, like, rap to us? Because at that time, I was really looking for recovery. I wanted to absorb as much as I can, you know, about how to change my life, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I thought about. Then I was like, you know, when I went to school, I was like, I'm going back to these jails. I'm going back to these institutions, and I'm really going to be a part of the healing process, you know? That was a goal of mine.
When you started into school, you saw yourself going into jails and being that thing that you didn't really, was kind of missing when you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was big for me. That was exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know? Well, what are some of like the bigger barriers that you face today creating that therapeutic environment, that safe environment for recovery?
Right. Well, you know, again, like I'm really fortunate because what I'm doing, working in jails and counseling, is really a big team effort, right? So I would say I'm like blessed because the staff there, the deputies, the warden, everything that the volunteers that come in, we all really work together, and there is a sincere push to like be helpful. So I have an advantage in that. But if I were to say what a disadvantage is, it's probably something along the lines of like staffing, you know, how the program runs. So the program that I facilitate right now, it happens once every year for 9 months. So you almost have to be there at the right time to be a part of that program. So just think about it. When it starts, somebody's probably getting arrested that would be a great candidate to be there, but they can't start it because it's too late.
Is that like funding and just?
Yeah, that's another funding thing. And then just the way the funding's set up, because we try to like do kind of like a an open cohort to where it could like at least every 90 days, because we're prepared to do that, but the staff in the jail is not really prepared to do that. You know, okay. And that's unfortunate. That's a big barrier. Another barrier is the privacy isn't the best. I mean, I have my own place to work, but it's not private. I mean, you know, everybody can see us going back and forth. You know, everybody looks at us and can see us from every angle because there's no like, there's no drapes in the windows. The windows are wide open.
Yeah.
So, you know, you see us going back and forth. And
well, I mean, I get that. They're like, of course. Go send them in that dark room with the counselor.
Hey, we're going to put the curtains up here for you too.
No, everything will be fine. I'm sure they're going to be doing therapy only.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's kind of like, it would be uncomfortable, I think, to like, to try to do anything.
You're doing one-on-one, you mean?
Yeah, when I'm doing
one-on-one. When you're doing one-on-one, you're in this fishbowl.
A cubicle, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and people are moving all around, so it's probably hard for the person receiving the therapy.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like coming into my office at work and sitting down with me.
Yeah, you can't like light a candle, yeah, burn some incense.
Well, I can, and it's really difficult to like even fathom trying to do trauma therapy other than talk therapy.
Okay, you know, why is that?
Because there's a lot of like when you do, like, you know, if you're brain spotting or something like that, it's such a, you know, everybody will look. If I'm sitting here with a pointer and I'm going like this and everybody can see me doing like this, everybody's, you know, kind of like the vibe isn't necessarily right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So trauma therapy is a little bit difficult to accomplish in there.
Do you think, I mean, something like trauma therapy, you know, where you do the therapy, I guess you're doing brain spotting, so there's not like that story that's involved, and I guess brain spotting, so it kind of can be a little less traumatic, I guess, doing the trauma therapy.
Right.
It sounds weird, but,
right,
you know, when you do like, what's it, EMDR, you know, and you have to relive a traumatic event, you know, like I did, I had a coach who did a trauma egg, and he had me fill out this egg, and I had all my traumatic experiences in there.
And then a really fucked up version of Easter.
Right, that's what I'm saying, right before.
What kind of Easter bunny visited you?
Let me say that. Happy Good Friday.
So I go to meet with him in the middle of the day, and we do then break down all my traumatic events. And then after the session, I just tried to keep the day moving like it was just another Tuesday.
Yeah.
That did not go very well.
You're triggered.
I was not
triggered
in a good
space. Walking out the room triggered.
I fired a client, cussed him out. Yeah. Slammed his door, walked out, and then on the drive home, I was like, "Oh, maybe I should have just went home after that therapy.
Should have went straight home after that."
So, but with
got some rest.
So, is that a concern? Like, if you are doing trauma therapy, and then these guys kind of go from sitting with you back into.
Well, I think it's a little bit different if you're brain spotting, because brain spotting, like if you do EMDR or other types of trauma therapy, you're bringing something particular to the table, so you're prepared to come in with your thing, whatever that may be, and you kind of speak about it as you're going through, so you're bringing up these traumatic events, right? Rather in brain spotting, you don't have to say anything, you know what I mean? There's sometimes no talking, and it's the uncomfortable silence is what I have to deal with the most, and a lot of time that's very therapeutic. So it's like being triggered as you leave kind of lessens that.
Yeah,
that's likely.
Well, what exactly is brain spotting?
That's a great question. Well, I guess we're getting off. I don't want to get too
far. No, that's good.
But it's just, it's like in the family of EMDR, it's like really trying to get your middle brain to get ignited, right? So like in talk therapy, if you and I are talking about your trauma and trying to get your brain to work correctly isn't going to work. Because
I just got to say that I'm looking at Wes silently judge you. Dr. West.
By the way, there is a doctor. There's a
doctor of psychology. Yeah. Don't nobody break their leg around here.
Please correct me, doctor, if I'm
thinking. I bet they're going to look over at me. Please don't say anything. I was just in my feels about the whole thing. Like, hey, I just don't know.
I told you, I'll pull you into the camera whenever you want, bro.
No, but keep going.
To talk your way through trauma is very difficult because the part of the brain that's being used in talk therapy is really not ignited through trauma, right? The therapy, what you're trying to get to is your middle brain. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get to your instinctual brain, the part of your brain that it like allows you to blink your eyes. It allows you to breathe. Mm. Like that, there's no thought process.
Now you're going to have me aware of my blinking and breathing and everything else. I'm going to be uncomfortable for the rest of the show. Right. Thank you.
So to do that, you need like, you know, some activity like with your sensory. You need sensory activity. So we're like, I'm watching you as, you know, we're beginning. I'm looking at your eyes as I'm like moving basically whatever kind of pointer the facilitator uses. And when we notice, you know, as you're going horizontal and vertical, I'll see something.
They're moving their eyes as you move this thing.
Right, you're following.
Their eyes are following.
Right. And then I'll ask you, hey, does that feel good to, you know, to stay, keep your eye fixated there? If you say, yeah, I'll sit back, I'll leave the pointer, and then either we'll talk about it, we'll do whatever. But the idea is when you're coming in, there's something, you know, you're bringing something too, but you don't necessarily have to talk about it. Like, you're leading the whole thing. I'm just rocking out with you, basically, the whole way, and trying to be supportive through the process. Does that sound right, doctor? Oh, thank you very much. See, I know what I'm talking
rocking
about.
Rocking out with you, that's a clinical term.
For that one part, you got
But yeah, so that doing that kind of stuff, and but then, you know, when you think about MRT, I think MRT, there's an aspect. So MRT is a type of therapy that, at least in the state of Georgia, like all the whole judicial system through the whole state rocks MRT. It's a moral recognition therapy, which is, and I'm not an expert on that at all. I'm actually getting trained in that next week. But it's really trying to talk through your trauma. So they're doing the best they can. So through that process of being somebody being in the program that I'm in, they do get to see their trauma in on some level, you know, but it's just not by me. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, how do you, like, in that open environment where it's not, you know, the most conducive, you know, you're literally open windows, how are you building trust with the people?
Well, I just think that, man, I really make an effort to be as transparent as possible. I really try to relate as much as possible. Like, I think I'm blessed with, I think I have a pretty good ability to verbalize what you're thinking. Mm. You know what I mean? So I could give you an example of, like, if you're going through something, if I give you an example that you relate to, it really captures a moment. And it almost, if you feel like I get you, then our conversation can really take off and we can really go somewhere with that. It's almost, if you can do that even before building, that leads up to a trusting relationship, just being able to relate to you, you know what I mean? So that's, I think that's really my thing in counseling, period. But under those circumstances, being in that population is, it's very important to do that. Because, you know, the thing about being locked up and being in institutions like that, right? There's no way that you're going to avoid wanting to get out, right? So that date and everything that has to do with that is on your mind all the time. Whether it be a year or 20 days or anything like that, as you're going throughout your day, you're thinking about leaving. So to be present in a place that you're trying to disappear from as soon as possible is extremely difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's what you're trying to grab a hold of. You know what I mean? And you know, there is, so, you know, and what I'll do is, you know, not with everybody, I'm not doing this like this is my thing, but a lot of times it happens to where, like, okay, let's talk about it. So, you know, your date, you're leaving it this day, you know, who you're going to see, you know, what's the problems with that, like, what's the obstacles, and we'll just go through that day, like, this, that, you know, it's an imaginary day at this time, but we'll talk it out, and then we'll get back, kind of, like, reel you back into what's going on with you today, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, what has been the most effective? Because we talked about different types of therapies and what kind of works, you know, in the jails, what doesn't. What have you found to be the most effective form of therapy?
Well, I think everything in, unless you're Dr. West and you do anti-psychiatry work, right? For the most part, it all falls under the umbrella of, like, cognitive behavioral therapy. It's all about your habits and behaviors, right? So that's what you're working on. So under that umbrella is a ton of other types of modalities, right? Like, you know, you have DBT, you have positive psychology falls under that.
DMT? Y'all do DMT?
DBT.
They let that in the jails? Yeah,
right. So for me, I think instilling, the first thing you want to do, period, I think with anybody that you sit with is that's struggling in any type of way, you want to try to instill a hope and have that hope be real. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think whatever works to get that, you know, and a lot of times it's not really manipulating your thoughts, but it's really bringing like, you know, bringing that person's reality. You're like, I'm not trying to dance around where we're at or anything like that. It's like, it's very real. When you're in an institution like that and you can't go home and you have no control over that and everybody else has control over you, like you are in a situation, man. Mm. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to like make you escape that. Like that's your reality right now. However, like if we do this together and I ride with you this whole way for the next 9 months, you know, I think we can get somewhere to where, you know, we can prevent this from happening again, hopefully, you know, going through this whole thing again.
That's a little bit like a lot of your time in counseling training, your mentor is positive psychology. Yes. Is the method.
Right.
Right. Where you're trying to help them to, you want them to kind of visualize and look towards something and then achieve that and create habits and thinking patterns that get them to where they want to be, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's true. And I think, like, when you think about positive psychology, I think, you know, just saying positive psychology.
Positive, right? Psychology. Sweater vest.
It sounds really yeah. Lame, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. But
it's a very eat, pray, love.
Right. Tapered all over on your wallpaper and everything. But I think, when I came into counseling, that's when I was graduating from school, positive psychology was a thing. It was a God thing to me because I so believe in the process, because I so believe into, like, you know, it's one thing to be manageable, but it's a totally different thing to flourish. And that's what I'm always looking for, regardless of what the situation is. Like, I don't see any reason, like the guys that I'm with right now, after the 9 months we do this and they transition into their next step, I don't see any reason why they can't flourish in with the things that they want to do in life, man. There's nothing that I see. And I'm like being as real as possible. The group of people. So this is my third year doing this. And there has not been a person where I said, man, you know what? His capacity is really going to stunt him from being able to flourish. Mm. Or his record is really going to stop him. It's definitely, we all have obstacles, right? But what positive psychology really pushes is for you to, like, not just be manageable. It's to you to, like, explode.
Thrive.
You know what I mean? Thrive. You know what I mean? So that's why I love it so much, because that's what I'm going for every time. Somebody sits in front of me, I'm automatically, like, looking at their strengths. I'm trying to expose them. I'm trying to be, like, optimistic to your situation, but in a real way.
Yeah.
Not in, like, unicorns and shit like that, yeah. But, like, in a real, like, this is your situation. What if we do this? Let's brainstorm. Let's talk about this. What do you like? What do you want to do? You know what I mean? Let's figure that out together. And let me be a part of that and get you to, like, a place where you can, like, you know, you can blow up.
Yeah.
And I'm always a person, like, for real, like for me, I feel like I've blown up. You know what I mean? And, like, I don't think I've ever, since I've been doing this, I don't think anybody that I've came across in the jails have done as much time as me. And they know that. They know that through the talk. Like, I know what you're going through. And it's almost always, there's always like an underlying, like, if I can do this, come on, bro. You dig what I'm saying? If I can make it, like, yeah. There's no reason. What's stopping you?
Yeah.
There's
this book that I'm reading right now. It's just a novel, but there's these girls in a group home, and they all, you know, have been to jail, been to prison, and they have, like, this therapist that comes in every week. But the therapist reveals, like, the worst thing she ever went through was, like, her boyfriend died, and it put her into a depression. And she was like, and if I can overcome that, then you guys can overcome anything. And, like, the girls are like, okay, so because, you know, you lost a boyfriend, you know, that means we can overcome the fact fact that we don't have moms, dads, our brothers are dead. Like, you know, these tragic backstories they have that this therapist can't relate to. But, you know, she has a heart for these girls, wants to help them, but she can't establish that credibility, can't establish
it's
that
hard
trust.
To connect.
Yeah, and so you have that, you know, the unique experience of, like, having literally been in their shoes before, and now you get to be the person that you needed.
Yeah, and that's an advantage for me, though. That's my advantage to the whole situation, right, to be able to do that. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, like, you know, my therapist right now, his lifestyle and my lifestyle is totally different, but he's extremely helpful to me, you know what I mean? But my ears are open to that right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when I heard, like, I hope I pronounce his name right, Gabor Mate, is that, did I pronounce? Mm-hmm. Now, this dude is an excellent, an amazing psychologist, right? But when he relates to, like, addiction, he talks about his addiction to classical music. Look at the hell out of here, bro. Classical music? He was like, yeah, I was hiding the CDs in my car. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? Classical music? Are you for real?
Isn't that in the realm of Hungry Ghosts, that book?
So I can't connect to that, but I can't take away. That's what I'm saying.
Classical CDs, bro. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's like, well, y'all in a rehab for weed?
Yeah, smoking weed?
You ever weed?
Probably somebody.
But what I'm trying to say is I can't connect him to him on that level, but that doesn't take away his work is amazing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but your ears have to be there to listen to that. You know, when you're in the situation that a lot of these guys are in, you know, where, you know, on the subject matter that we're talking about, being able to relate on that level is a huge advantage, you know.
Yeah. So speaking of modalities, one of the modalities I'm really proud of that you use is you use the Most High content in your groups.
Oh, yes. I am the mental health director of this whole program.
That is, And you were doing that even before you were the mental health director. But what is, it's really cool that you're using it and you're utilizing it. What do you think running a group like that where you play a short film, one of our short films, and then you have a group conversation, what do you think the advantage is for them in that situation? What do you think that gives them that maybe a normal group wouldn't?
Right. So the biggest advantage is that these guys are listening.
They're captivated.
They're captivated. Audience. Right. They're a captive audience. They're waiting for anything to come through there that they can sit in front of and pay some attention to, because the rest of their day is in limbo. So they're like, they want to learn. They want to learn. They're interested in it, and they're listening. So when you listen to the content, I mean, that's it. Now I'm a true facilitator. Like, I can ask these questions about it pertaining to whatever documentary I show, and I'll get really good interactions from it. Tears, crying, guys getting excited, like watching Montana Society, really into it, you know, going to the female side and putting on Megan's Prayer, and it's like such a like a deep connection with these. Your content's pretty good, dude. You know what I mean?
Just pretty good.
I was setting that up. Thank you. Took a little long to get there, but that's all. All right, show's over. Yeah.
But it's been extremely successful.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I don't know, Wes could probably attest to this. Every facilitator needs something, because you're doing it forever, right? You're doing this for the rest of your life. So eventually you're going to need as much content as possible to feed these guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I do not want to be repetitive. So, you know, having, you know, over 150 documentaries, all kinds of, you know, having the Netflix of recovery at my fingertips, it literally makes my job easier, a lot easier, you know, so.
That's awesome.
And that's real.
Yeah. And you know, it's cool to see, because we didn't, you know, we kind of just didn't start like with the idea to do that, right? It kind of just, especially like Megan's Prayer, we did, that was our first documentary. And then I think Mitchell was like, let's go show this somewhere. And when we were screening Megan's Prayer, like in some treatment centers, Megan's mother would come with us.
To go around and screen them.
So Megan's Prayer is a documentary about the correlation, the comorbidity with the mental health, addiction, and suicide, and the correlation between those three. And we interview Susan, who is this woman, Megan, who committed suicide, and we interview her mother, So her mother tells the story from her perspective. So you imagine this that documentary plays, and then there's mom is sitting right there. And it's a pretty powerful.
That's really powerful, man.
Yeah, and she would not say much, but just her presence. And then I would see as we would leave, people would come up to her and talk to her. And I think that's how we stumbled on even going, oh, could this stuff could actually be used in a therapeutic environment?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing of one of the documentaries, I love all the documentaries, but the ones like Megan's Prayer and Dog Island, where you're getting a family's, like a mom or dad's perspective of the person that's in active addiction or just getting clean, that's very powerful. Because when my guys watch it, they're thinking about their mom. They're thinking about, you know, their kid. They're thinking about all that kind of stuff, and it really resonates big time. And it's funny, though, because, like, the guys at the jail, they don't know none of y'all. I mean, I think most everybody's just kind of probably been in one of your documentaries, but I'm not in too many of them. Uh-huh. So they're like, they see you and they see Wes. They're like, do you know these guys? These are my boys. All right, you'll see me in a minute. Hold on, three more minutes, I'll be on there. There I am, right there. You know what I mean?
So what about, I know a lot of the people you're working with have some history of substance use disorder, and so that's what's kind of qualifying them for this 9-month program. But what about individuals who have violent histories? How does that change, or does that change the way that you approach and connect with somebody?
Well, this program is not supposed to have violent offenders, but it always has violent offenders, because again, like one of the hiccups is just you can only get in there once a year. So a lot of times they're filling up space to keep the program going. So like my first day when I walked in, my first experience of going in this jail to try to do it, I was just going in there on my own. And I think I called you that day. I was like, man, I'm just going up in here, man. I got this guy wants me to visit him. This is what I've always been wanting it to do. And it was kind of during the tail end of COVID. And, they made me sit there, and they never let me go back and talk to the person. So I was like really pissed. I stayed there for like 3 hours trying to wait to go see this person. And they were literally like bouncing me back and forth between these two places to talk to two different deputies. And neither of them helped me. So I ended up walking out, and I was like, I was so pissed, man, because this is what I've been wanting to do. I don't know. What were we talking about?
Well, the question was... I think you're getting violent here.
Okay, yes. So,
getting retriggered.
So anyways, let me get back. Okay, so my first day.
Is it getting uncomfortable?
So my first day, I go in, and my first client, he sits down in front of me. He automatically, like, shows, like, his tattoo, and he's in a gang. It's like an Aryan gang, you know what I mean? And he's saying the N-word, right? But he's saying it like a brother. So I'm like all confused with this dude. I'm like, how is this? You know, and he's like really, he's like really kind of like putting this front on, you know? So he puts the thing out there. I'm like, oh, and he points at it. I'm like, oh, okay, that's, oh, okay, well, oh, all right. He's like, yeah, these, and I'm like, man, you're talking like, well, you sure you what gang are you in? So, but like, you know, I just, so like there are violent offenders in there. It didn't really, that incident was just one of a couple to where, you know, I have kind of spoken aggressively, you know what I mean? Because it was, but it was one of those things like we're just speaking the same language to get right with each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't even really. Nothing was going to never even come close to violence, but he was just checking me to show me where he's at. And I'm like, all right, cool.
You got to channel that Chino.
Yeah. We just, you know, we kept it moving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's a great guy. He's doing amazing right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was one of those, but of course I had my instinctual side of me was like, damn, dude, this is going to be a problem. I ain't going to be able to work with this guy.
Yeah.
But you know, after we got through that, it ended up being, okay, so working with violent offenders, I don't think it. Again, I hate keep going back to that, but I'm around that for years and years of my life.
Yeah.
So it's nothing that, I can keep a poker face, through that type of interaction, you know, pretty well.
Okay. Don't let them know you're scared. Don't let the counselor know.
When in doubt, just kiss yourself.
If you're scared, say you're scared. If you're scared, say you're scared.
Yeah.
But what about, you know, dealing with people who do have substance use issues, and then, you know, it's not like jails are free of substances. Mm-hmm. Like, you, whatever you can find on the street, you can find inside. So how do you navigate that?
That's beyond me, because they hold that down pretty well at the place that I'm at. Mm-hmm. That's not happening.
Okay.
There. Yeah. It's just not getting through. It's a tight facility.
You know? Well, I imagine the program probably has, to be a part of that 9-month program, you probably have to, you know, take a drug test and submit to consistent drug tests. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, it's one of those things, like one of the things that you try to do from the beginning is like, let these guys know that you guys are in jail. Right. And, you know, if you was in a different pod, being vulnerable, right, could get you killed. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's the difference. Here, like your job is to be vulnerable.
So they're in a pod consistently together.
Yes. It's just them. It's like rehab.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and there's a lot of cool ass shit going on too, because they have dogs. Like, they train dogs daily. They have perks of like working in and around the jail to do other stuff. You know what I mean? They have a schedule that's keeping them.
Is this
pretty
a state funded initiative or
a county funded? Yeah.
County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So the county got together and said, we want to implement something that is actually going to help to rehabilitate.
Yeah, it was all initiated from the sheriff of the county.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And then like another organization sees that, like, well, RSAT is a statewide. It's really a program that's ran in prisons.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But recently they brought it down to a county level. And it's a whole different funding mechanism that's doing it. And it's really ran by the sheriff of the county.
So for people who don't know, what's the difference between a jail and a prison?
Well, I'll put it this, if I had to do 2 years, take me to the prison immediately. Yeah. But it's a rougher place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a definitely rougher place, but when you're doing time, it's a whole different level. When you're in a county jail, you're in a county jail, and, like, you know, guys are in there for maybe some felonies, but a lot of high misdemeanor stuff. They're doing crime, you know, doing repeated offenders, violation, probation violations, and stuff like that going on there. But the thing about they're a lot stricter.
The jails.
Uh-huh. When you go to prison, then you're going to like a new way of living, because you're going to be in there a lot of time for a while.
Yeah,
like you're going to at least a year if you go to prison, at least.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in jail, I don't know how they do it in Georgia, but in Pennsylvania, where I went to jail 5 quadrillion times, 11 and a half months is the most that you can really do in a county bed. Is that how they do it here, really?
Yeah. Yeah, the way it was explained to me was, if your sentence says months, you're going to jail. If your sentence says year or years, you're going to prison. So it could be like there is a difference between 12 months and 1 year, and it's where you're going.
And then jails, there's probably some more like transitory, like you might have people who you might be in a pod or a barrack or whatever with people who are getting waiting to be processed to go to prison.
Yeah.
So you might be there on some failure to appear on some bullshit.
And some dude.
And some guy's sleeping next to you who is waiting to start his 17-year bid for whatever.
He's about to go in.
Right.
Yeah. That is a whole dynamic right there, too. Yeah. There's a lot of in and outers.
Yeah.
You know, dudes coming in, finishing, maxing out their probation or something like that just to get it done. And there's a dude there that's like waiting to do the rest of his life there.
Right.
But prisons, even though prisons is where it's dangerous, gangs, drugs. It's a city. You're going to a different city. The population is probably at least 3,000, 2,500 and up. So, and you're all encased in all that. Yeah. But people are like living there. But that's where all they like, you know, it's very rarely you see like a shank in a county. Some counties, I'm not speaking to, some counties are really rough. Like, in New York, I can't think of the name of the Rikers, is a, that's a jail, But it's like a very dangerous place to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same in Cali.
Yeah.
You know, but here it's not, for the most part, it's not really like that.
Would you, is that something you'd like to do? Like, you're in jails now, offering therapeutic services. Mm-hmm. Is that something you'd like to do, is offer that in prison?
I would love to be open to that. I mean, I would love to do that because I think, you know, it's needed in there. Like I said, and it's probably, it's bigger there. It's more organized there. Like Georgia is doing, I mean, they have a whole, one of my guys that was in the RSAT program and ended up having to go to prison, and he's in like a whole faith-based prison. Yeah, so I'm just like, man, like,
okay.
I would love to go in there and work.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and do something like that. That would be great.
Yeah,
you know, and honestly, like, even though I did have that experience where I went to that jail in particular, this jail that I'm working at now, and they turned me away my first attempt. I was actually asked to go work at that jail. You know what I mean? So it wasn't. So all these things, I mean, I've been blessed, man. You're like, you know, I've been invited to do the things that I've always wanted to do. I didn't really have to use a lot of ambition to get where I needed to go, you know?
Yeah. Can you share a moment where you've seen a breakthrough, a success story on somebody? You don't have to use real names or anything, mm-hmm. but where you saw the light bulb go off for them in jail with you, and then them continue that moving forward?
Well, that happens all the time. One in particular that really stands out is, I kept hitting this wall with this guy that was telling me like, he couldn't do it. Like, it's not going to work for him, you know? And he was really stressed out about it. Like, he was just so...
Like, he couldn't stay sober.
He couldn't stay sober, and he couldn't... One of the big things is that he could not separate himself from the enabling relationship that him and his mother have had, like, so long. It's just something that he's always fell back into. Like, whenever he's had trouble, he goes right back into this enabling relationship where there's money, there's, like, you know, the things that encourage, you know, him using. And he's like, this is... Every time I've tried... Every time I hit a bump, my mom is waiting for me, you know, basically really waiting for me to help me out in that way, which I take advantage of and I go use. So that is my pattern, and I cannot break it. Mm-hmm. And that's really a tough, like, that's a tough pattern to break. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a fallback like that, every time you try, you know, you have a fallback to go get high with somebody that I think his mom was very wealthy. You know what I mean? And they just have this relationship that he didn't know. Number one, he didn't know how to get out of that relationship, and therefore he did not know how to break that pattern. And he was being straight up with me. So for 9 months, we really talked about his independence, like really, you know, making his independence. I know that's what you want, but you keep slipping up every time you get challenged. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. The issue is like you are continuously looking for an excuse to go back out, you know? And so, you know, we role played these scenarios. Like, I didn't play his mom or anything like that, but like, mm-hmm. whatever, okay, your mom
come in
comes
with a
up.
Dress.
Yeah.
Hey, Sonny.
He let your hair down.
Yeah. Okay, I'm mom. You're you.
That's right. He could let his hair down. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. But that speaks to kind of your modality, which is like, let's visualize the version of you that you want to get to. And then we're going to kind of reverse engineer it now.
Right.
And what are going to be your obstacles to get to that point? And then role-playing each one of
those
scenarios.
We're role-playing each scenario. What do you do in this? Like, you know, let's say, you know, you don't like your job. Right? You're going to quit because you don't like it? Because your mom's going to, you know, your mom's going to hook you up because you continue this toxic relationship?
Yeah.
Plus, you love your mom, but you're continuing this really horrific relationship with her.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be a part of that? You know, and we just, that's the kind of conversations we had for months. And another advantage I have working this program is that I do all the aftercare. Mm. You see what I'm saying? So that's a huge thing. So, like you know, the
you're helping them to transition from jail to a healthy, safe environment.
Right. Yep. We go together.
Yeah. And then you continue to counsel them.
Continue the counselors all through, yep. I see them all twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And but so that's a huge advantage for that reason. Like guys that are like really having, they don't really see sobriety really working even through that. Because, you know, when it's all good while we're in here talking about it in this closed in bubble, we can talk all that stuff. But when it, you know, when the you know, when it gets real, when you walk out the door, I can't tell you how many times I was really like, man, I get this. I really want to be clean. You know, I got it. I'm telling, hey. And I walk literally, I'm feet away from the jail that I'm, that or prison that I've spent time in. And I go straight, like my ride's coming with the shit. Mm. And I go straight to using it, man. That's like my reality. Like spending time really trying, because I didn't have anything after that. I just got let out. So all I had was my own morals to sit on. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Addicts have a pretty good moral code, right? I think. So,
but you know, I mean, this literally, I'm like, yeah. This is it, guys. I'm walking out right, and then I get in the car, and I got something in my arm already.
Yeah. Mm.
Wow. That has really happened repeatedly to me. And I'm not like, in my head at that time, I'm really not trying to do that again, ever.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the nature of addiction, right?
Right, big time. So being there, like Christian, you know, Christian was with us, you know, last year. Well, not last year, just about 4 or 5 months ago,
mm-hmm.
when the last program ended. They come out, I receive them. All of them, when they get released, I'm right there. Hey, let's do this. You know, I get them in the, we all get in the car. We go, I take them straight to parole. First thing we do is check in. I'm going to take everybody to parole, and everybody's going to go report. Right now. Get in that car, I take you straight to the shop. We get you clothes, we get you cosmetics, we get you all these things that you need in a backpack, right? Then we go eat.
Yeah.
And then I take you to your sober living.
Mm.
And I'm with you. You got my phone number. I'm talking to you. We give you phones. Like, it's such, the aftercare is where it's at, bro.
Yeah.
It really is. Because that program, the reason I even knew that program existed is because they let people out of that program and they were literally on the streets not knowing what to do. And people were calling me, hey, Dick, because, you know, I also do work like placing people, right? So, hey Dave, I got these people that just got out of jail. They don't know where to go. You know, they're trying to put me in a at the mission or something like that. You know what I mean? All the way in Atlanta. I'm over here. So I helped out there. It really got me interested in like, damn, these dudes, they do all this programming,
yeah,
and they don't even have like nowhere to sleep once they walk out the door.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's why we, you know, you got places like this right here, like my boy Spot. You know what I mean? To go to, I can get you there.
For people just listening, Choice Recovery. Choice Recovery.
David pointed to the tattoo he has.
Oh,
on
did
his
I?
Neck.
No, I mean, no, Choice Recovery.
The tattoo of Choice Recovery he got for Joseph's.
Big chest living. Piece.
Oh, yeah. Big chest it's my piece. Shirt. I'm sorry. Yeah, if you're on Spotify, it was a shirt.
Yeah.
With the logo of my boy
So as we're kind of like, you know, coming to close, what is it that you wish people understood about incarcerated individuals and their capacity to grow?
Man, I think, I know another gentleman along with me that's been incarcerated a good while. And again, he has his own sober living now. So like, you know, the people that are going through whatever they're going through that put them to get them incarcerated, if they have the guidance and a little bit of help and you can instill hope in these, help with the hope, anything could happen. You know what I mean? You can flourish. You can thrive. You know what I mean? And I'm really extremely blessed, man, to again, this is like not just me. This is a whole team effort from like the staff all the way from the captain of the warden of the jail, the lieutenant. The people that work in this program as deputies, they are like trained therapeutic deputies. They go through a special training to deal with this, to deal with that community. And we all want them to win the game, man. Mm. You know, these dudes are training like dogs right now to like be service dogs for people that are handicapped or like police officers that have been hurt in the line of duty or anything like that. You know, they train those dogs to be their service, to be service dogs.
The inmates are training.
The inmates are training them, yeah. And then the person that does that, that runs that program, he always ends up hiring somebody full time to get a job to work with them if they really connect with the dogs. Mm. He offers them a full-time position to work as soon as they walk out the door. So, like, the advantages are there. The options are there. Like, there's no... Dude, I'm telling you, man, if you guys are on the fence about, like, thinking about sobriety or recovery or anything like that, man, there are so many options now. Yeah. It's not like whenever, you know, I was out there. It is different. It's a different world right now, man. You can custom fit your recovery life.
Mm-hmm.
For real.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the steps. You know what I'm saying? And the, I mean, there's all different ways to do it.
I tried to custom fit mine. I was like, just cocaine on Saturday. Yeah. Like, just Saturdays is okay. You know?
That was the
option.
Got
Sunday to come. That was my our custom options, fit. Bro. Yeah, it was choice. Cocaine recovery. And for some reason, that program never took off.
That, I wouldn't suggest that one. Okay? I wouldn't suggest cocaine on the weekends as your walk to
well,
to
if recovery. Every day is the weekend.
Yeah.
Right. That was my custom
right.
fit.
Right. Yeah.
If I'm clocked out, it's the weekend.
Every day is Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, man, I just can't say that enough. There's so many ways to recover. There's so many options to deal with your mental health today. Yeah. You know, and I'm not saying it's so far from perfect, bro. There's a lot of work to be done, but it's never been like this. I've been doing this, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm 52. I've been knee deep in this shit for a big part of my life, and I've never seen like caring, loving, passionate people that want people that are using to stop and get their life back together. I've never seen it like that ever in my life. Mm. It's a room full of us right here.
Yeah.
That's all pushing that, right? Yeah. Pushing for you to have better mental health, to let you know that you're not broken. You know what I'm saying? That to let you know that you're okay, that you know things will be all right, you know, stay the course. You know what I'm saying? There's numbers. We have numbers here. Mm. At this show, you can call us and we will be there to help you any way we can, and that's real.
Yeah. Mm.
You know what I mean?
Now, is there any way that us on this side can help support programs on the inside?
That's a great, great question. So right now, again, like when I said, I left out, I think I mentioned them before when we first started talking, but the volunteer work that's done, I mean, there's a place called Local Church. They come in there every week, man, and just to help these dudes. Nobody's giving them any money. They take time out of their day to go visit these inmates, try to get them, not just get their needs, like not preparing them to get out. I'm talking these guys, like when they get to know you and you're in there, they go help your kids that are out there, your families with money or food or whatever. Like not just that, like they supply phones. You know what I mean? For these guys to have, I mean, the communication is very open. So like, any kind of, you know, I would suggest if you have, I mean, you don't even have to be like very organized or anything like that. But if you're a part of a ministry or you have a nonprofit and like you want to be a part of like, you know, going to institutions to be helpful, just go and talk to them and see what's available and how you can be helpful. And they'll receive you. For the most part, they'll probably receive you.
Okay.
All right.
So final thoughts on advice for counselors or peer support specialists. Who want to do this work. Now, I know you said, you know, just go check. But for, you know, are there certifications or certain trainings for the peer support specialists who want to really have a heart for this and they want to do work in jails and prisons?
Well, I love the idea of, you know, somebody getting clean and wanting to serve. And, you know, I think being a CARES worker or a CPA, a certified peer specialist, is a great beginning. You know what I mean? And you can do great work. And I know people that are peer specialists that it really opens the door to a ton of opportunity in the business. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that, you know, you necessarily be a facilitator. That, you know, it could do any part of any, you know, rehab or any facility that you work at. You can go, you can, you know, you might be able to, if you're good with numbers and you have a CPS credential and you go into, you know, a rehab or something to work, you know, you can end up being, you know, there working with the money or being a business development person, like wherever you're, that I've seen that, that credential get people different places in recovery that's like fruitful. But I would always, I always push education and getting the letters. I mean, not that it's like, I don't think anything makes me better because I have an education or anything like that, but it definitely give me more options and opportunities. That's undeniable. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, there's a guy who's an actual professor. He got like 5 jobs and it's all high tech stuff over here. He's a doctor. You know what I mean?
They wouldn't let me do it without them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I still think I'd be a great teacher.
Yeah, you'd be what? Without the PhD. That's, you have to have that. You know, if I would always say, try to go get the letters, man. You know what I mean? Try to be certified in as much stuff as possible. And if you're passionate about it, I mean, go, you know, get to school and get that going.
Yeah. All right, you want to close this out?
What do you think about that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sounds great.
You're trying to therapize him right now?
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
Well, I think about Christian because Christian... Like,
we got it in. Yeah. We got it in.
I mean, you can't tie Christian down. He's like, you know, a man of many hats.
I've done a lot of different training, yeah. And what I realized, all the training did was give me permission to do what I already knew how to
there
do.
There you go. Yeah. That's yeah. it. Mm-hmm.
I just needed...
Yeah. It's icing on the cake, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us again.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I love you dudes, man. Thank you so much for coming out and hanging out with me. I really feel the love right now. You guys are all special to me, man. Yeah. Everybody in this room, so special to me.
That's
I love
because,
you guys.
You know, and you're special to us because you made us such a good dinner tonight.
Yeah.
But, but thank you to our donors and sponsors who make this show possible and to our studio audience.
Yeah,
who make
yeah.
us feel not alone.
That's right. That's
and,
right.
And yeah, we'll have this available. Monday, Tuesday?
Yeah, and Todd Stumbo is going to be on the show next Friday.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Love that dude. He's yeah. a monster.
Cool. Yeah. Good
he's a
good monster.
Beast. He's a beast in the industry, man.
He's a beastie boy.
Right?
Mm-hmm. All right. I don't know anything about that show, so if you want a soft preview.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we haven't figured it out yet, so he's you know we'll dog. Get there. Yeah.
Cool. That's great. I'm so happy you have him on the show.
All right.
Cool. Everybody come back next week.
Yeah. Tune in. Tune in, man.
Peace. Thank you.
Peace.